Okay. I want to welcome this morning Jeff here with us. Just recently moved here, he and his family from Colorado, and they're looking for a church home, and we're glad to have you here with us. And let's see, April is your wife, and Kenan?
Kian.
Okay, Kian, who is 4 years old. And so we're glad to have you folks here with us today. All right, we're doing this survey of Bible history. We started this last week, and just by way of a review for those of you who weren't with us, real quickly, what we're doing here is basically we're taking the approach to this thing is really serving two purposes. Number one, it is to help all of us to make sure that we know these basic Bible principles here, stories of key people and events throughout the Bible. Want to make sure that you know these things. And then second purpose of it is that this is a great tool to use in evangelism. Of course, that's what we've been focusing on for quite some time, is outreach and how to study with people and so forth. So basically the idea here is that, as I was sharing with the class last week, as I've had opportunity to study with a lot of different people, what I found is there are a lot of folks who just simply don't know very much about the Bible. They know a few particular stories that are some of the, you know, the most famous stories, like David and Goliath and Jonah and the whale and some of those kinds of stories. But when it comes to being able to put pieces together and to be able to see how things are connected, they really can't do that because they just really don't know a whole lot about different people and key people and events throughout the Scriptures. But if you take this survey and you learn these basic stories and these basic people and key events that are here, then what it does is, as we were talking last week, is it basically forms like a skeleton. Okay? It's the framework that you build the rest of the Scriptures on. Just like the body has a skeleton, without a skeleton, what would happen to your body? We talked about this last week. What would happen with your body if you didn't have a skeleton in there? It'd just be a pile of mush, okay? You wouldn't be able to do anything because the skeleton, the framework, the bones, is what holds everything together, okay? And basically that's what this is. Think of this as like the skeleton of Bible stories and Bible information that you piece everything else onto. So we go through and we just look at these basic fundamental people, key people and events, and if you know these, then as you're studying the Bible from here, you're reading about different people and different events, then some of those other things make a whole lot more sense. Without this knowledge, without this basic information, a lot of the things that you read and study in the Scriptures won't make a whole lot of sense. Or, at the very least, you miss some real important connections there. So that's what we're doing, is going back and we're looking at these key people and events. And what I'm encouraging you to do is to learn these basics here. Okay? And then, from here, you can put meat onto those bones, you see, as you study. You add the meat and everything else to it, and you begin to really develop a more full and complete knowledge of these different events and so forth. So we started out last week with the story of creation, and we saw there that God created the heavens and the earth and all the things that He created in how long?
6 days.
6 days. And then what did He do on the seventh day? He rested, okay? And for the most part, when we're talking about this survey, that's all you need to know, okay? That's all you need to know, that God created the heavens and the earth and everything in 6 days. The seventh day He rested. Then we looked at the story of Adam and Eve. In the story of creation, you know, you see God created man, how? In His image, okay? And then we go to the story of the fall of man, and there were a couple of things that we mentioned in here. And again, on your sheet there, you have the event in the column on the left, and then just some key points about that in the column on the right. So when Adam and Eve sinned, what happened there? What was one of the key things that resulted from their sin? I'm sorry?
Death.
Death came into the world, okay? And not only that, but the relationship between God and man was severed. Remember, we've talked about so many times the relationship that God had with man, with Adam and Eve before sin, was a what kind of relationship? It was a walking in the garden in the cool of the day relationship. Okay? And the reason that we know that, and again, the whole point of this is we pick up some little tidbits of information that so oftentimes people miss in just a casual reading of the text, some things that, first part, are really kind of interesting. Okay? They hold your interest to the stories, but they fill in some interesting blanks there that otherwise you kind of like, okay, I understand what it's saying, but I don't know why. Okay? When after Adam and Eve had sinned, they ate of the fruit, and what happened immediately? What did it say there? Their eyes were open. They realized they were naked. And then what happened? They heard what? The sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. You see? And that statement tells us what the relationship was, because when they heard that sound, what did they do? They hid. Why did they hide? Was it because they heard a sound they'd never heard before? Absolutely not. They knew exactly what that sound was. It was the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. How did they know that? Because they'd heard it before. You see? So we have that kind of a relationship that existed, and now that sin enters into the world and it severs that relationship, so therefore the relationship between God and man has been changed, okay, as a result of this sin. Now, the other important thing that we talk about in this particular section that we want to zero in on here, and this is going to carry through in the next segment that we look at here, after God had His conversation with Adam and Eve and the serpent, we saw something else that took place here that is very significant. And what was it? Anybody recall? Okay. What we saw was when Adam and Eve, when their eyes were open, they realized they were naked. What did they do? They tried to cover themselves by sewing fig leaves together, right? But after God is finished dealing with them and so forth, what does God do? He made clothing, garments for them out of animal skins. Okay? And why is that significant? Okay. What we see happening here is it's the first time that we see innocent blood being shed to cover man's sin. Okay? And so this introduces then the sacrificial concept here, where blood is shed to cover the sins of men. Because, you know, you got to ask the question, okay, where did God get the animal skins from to make the garments? Well, obviously, animals had to die, didn't they, in order for that to happen. So we find then this is the beginning, and that helps. If you don't keep that particular point in mind, then as you're reading through, you know, the old law and all the regulations of the law requiring these animal sacrifices and blood being shed, and you read about the Passover and, you know, the blood over the doorpost, and you read about Jesus dying on the cross and His blood being shed, it doesn't make as much sense, does it? You kind of go, okay, I understand that, but why did all that start? Well, here's where it started, right here. You see? Here's where it started. And that's why that kind of sacrifice was being what was required. Now, any questions about any of that? Anybody? Okay. All right, let's look at Cain and Abel. Okay? The next section on here. And in this story of Cain and Abel, what we're finding here, first of all, is the first mention of sacrifices, okay, in terms of that man now was offering some kind of a sacrifice to God. Now, up to this point, we don't have any instructions or anything that tells us how those sacrifices were to be made, what was to be offered, or anything else. Basically, what we have is that they were offering sacrifices. They must have... One of the things here... I won't charge you extra for this morning, okay? One of the things that we have to do as we're reading through these things is use our, you know, our brain and common sense here and kind of some things you have to understand that's there, even though it's not written. In other words, why else would Cain and Abel be offering sacrifices if they had not had some kind of instruction to do so? You see? Don't know what that instruction was. We don't have any information about it in there, but I think it is a reasonable assumption, you see, to make that somewhere from the time that God made those skins, those garments for them out of the animals, that there was some kind of an instruction given to Adam and Eve and his descendants about making sacrifices. Okay? So Cain and Abel, now we find, are offering sacrifices to God, right? And what happens concerning these sacrifices? First of all, what kind of sacrifices are they? We're in Genesis chapter 4 here. Okay?
Abel's was from his flocks, but his intended flocks.
Okay.
Cain's was from the bounty of the earth, because he tilled the soil.
Okay. Cain tilled the soil, so he brought some bounty from the soil, okay, some of the produce. Abel was a keeper of the flocks. He brought some of his offerings. What's the difference between these sacrifices? What does the text tell us here? God looked upon favor on Abel's sacrifice, right? What's the problem here? Why did God look upon favor on Abel's but not upon Cain's?
Abel's is described as the first fruits. It was the best that he had.
Okay.
And Cain's was just some of,
okay,
you know, what the ground produced for him.
All right.
Cain wasn't as generous.
Okay. All right. It's important that we understand here that it was not an issue of one being an animal sacrifice and the other being a grain or a produce sacrifice, which a lot of people, you know, kind of missed that idea. They said, well, the reason God didn't accept Cain's is because he didn't offer an animal sacrifice. Most likely not. Even under the old law that was given to Moses, there were certain requirements for offerings to be made of grain and other produce and so forth. So it wasn't the issue of animal versus, you know, something else. What's the real issue is what the attitude of the heart is. Okay? And some of your texts read, and just get a different reading here. I think the New International Version, I think, is one that reads that Cain brought some. Okay? What does the King James read right there? Who's got a King James? Anybody? What other versions do you have? The English Standard Version just simply says, in the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground. And it just says an offering. Okay? Any other translation? Yeah. So we have a problem here in this sacrifice. And how do we know, again, that, you know, what Cain's attitude is about all of this? Anything in here indicating that to us?
Well, when Cain's offer was not looked upon with favor, he got mad.
Okay. All right. It is significant that the text here tells us that Abel brought the first fruit. Okay, the fat portions. Okay, which indicates what? Why is that significant? When you bring the first fruits or the fat portions, what does that indicate?
Well, it's an acknowledgement of where it all comes from.
Okay, it's the best. Okay, And you're giving God the best that you have rather than just, as the New International Version indicates, some. Okay? It's a difference between, well, I've got this over here, and so let me bring this and I'll give it to God because I'm required to make a sacrifice, versus this is the best that what I have, and I'm going to bring that and offer that to the Lord. Yeah? Yeah.
Because if you think about it, the harvest has been completed.
Right.
It would almost be likened to
right.
Him bringing some of the seed that's used for
right.
Planting in context of yours.
Oh, absolutely. And if you go back and you look at, okay, again, why is understanding this part significant to us understanding other things in the Scriptures later on? When you look at the requirements of the law of Moses, when God gave them these instructions, what were the criteria for these offerings? If it was an animal sacrifice, what kind of sacrifice was it to be? Okay, it was to be, first of all, of the firstborn of your flocks. An animal without spot or defect or any other blemish, you see. If it was to be a grain offering or some other kind of produce offering, what was that supposed to be? Where do we get the term first fruits? You say, why first fruits? Jeff, what were you saying here just a moment ago? Right. If I give as I am harvesting my crops, you see, and I give of the first fruits of the harvest, okay, then what I'm doing is I'm giving out of faith that God is going to complete the rest of my harvest. In other words, that everything else is going to continue to grow and I will have a productive harvest season. Rather than waiting to the end of the harvest. You see, once I've collected everything and I know what I got, you see, and then taking my tithe or what you say and offering that to God, you see the difference in those two concepts. And so that's why God required first fruits, was because it was an act of faith. I'm giving you of these first fruits, the firstborn, you see. This is the firstborn of all of my sheep. Well, how do I know for sure I'm going to have any more sheep? You say, rather than waiting until all of them are born and going, okay, the birthing season is over. I've got, you know, X number of lambs here. This one right here looks pretty good. I think I'll take that one. It doesn't have anything wrong with it that I can see. I'll offer that one to God. You see the difference in those concepts. And this is right here where this apparently begins. You say, why was God not satisfied with Cain's offering, but he was with Abel's? You say, because of what Abel offered from his heart was the best that he had. You say, the firstborn, the fat portions, versus taking some of what Cain had in offering that to the Lord. It's all a matter, and we see here another very important principle that we see throughout the Scriptures, and especially in the time of Jesus, and we've mentioned this many, many times before in our studies, it really always does come down to an issue of what? The heart. See? It comes down to an issue of the heart. Because whatever I'm doing, if I'm not doing it from the heart before God, then it's not going to be acceptable before God. Okay? So, we have this first mention of this sacrifice. Let me get somebody to read, turn over to Hebrews 11 in verse 4. Somebody, whoever gets there, and read that for us, please. Again, we get a little bit more indication of the writer of Hebrews about this sacrifice, and if you want to write in your little sheet there, Hebrews 11:4, just as a reference that you can have there, the writer of Hebrews here gives us a little bit more of an indication here of the difference in these sacrifices. Who's got it? You got it, Wes? Go ahead. Okay. What was it? How was it that Cain offered this more excellent sacrifice?
By faith.
Okay. It's by faith. So the indication here is that Abel offered his sacrifice by faith and Cain did not. Okay. Now, so as a result of this, what else do we see happening here? Cain looks upon his brother Abel, and he's got some bad feelings towards him, doesn't he? Okay? But God speaks to Cain first before the bad event happens, and what does he tell him? We're back over in Genesis chapter 4 here. Okay? He says, "Why are you very angry? And why is your face fallen or downcast? If you do well," and this is a basic, this is a basic biblical principle here that's vitally important for us to understand. God tells Cain, "If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you. Okay? But you must master it." So, you know, God in speaking to Cain here gives this basic fundamental principle that says what? We need to be doing well or right. You see? Do the right thing. If we're doing the right thing, then we're going to be right with God. If we're not doing the right thing, what's the result going to be? Sin is going to be right there all the time, waiting to pounce on us. Okay. Now, if you take that principle and you go over to Matthew chapter 5 and you look at the Beatitudes, okay, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is sharing with his audience there all of these things that in which people are blessed if they do them. And what does he say that connects to this? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for what? Righteousness. For they will be filled. Okay? Just a statement that God makes, you know, that is connected to this event here in this conversation he has with Cain. If you do what is right, you'll be accepted. If you don't, then sin is crouching at your door. Okay? And then, you know, when we think about the whole concept of hungering and thirsting for righteousness, what is righteousness? Basically, right living. Okay? Right living. So how important then is it for us to live right? Right? Any thoughts or questions on that at all?
Chuck. I'm just thinking, you know, often God is to be in a conversation with me. And at this point, when it's sacrificed, we just can't get it.
Right.
Yeah. Grace and mercy is kind of a
thing. Which also, by the way, it is an indication, again, of what, you know, was the gist of Cain's sacrifice, wasn't it? That God's pointing out to him, you didn't do what you were supposed to be doing here. You say, you didn't do right. You didn't do apparently what he had been instructed concerning the sacrifices. And that's why that statement from God, if you do what's right, you're going to be accepted. If you don't, sin's crouching at your door. So we have all those kind of indications here of the difference between his sacrifice and that of Abel. So, as a result of this, this whole thing, does that settle Cain's problem here? Absolutely not. What does he do? He makes a choice. Makes a bad choice, doesn't he? And he goes out and he kills his brother Abel. Okay? And in the conversation then that God has with him after killing his brother, interesting statement here that is made that oftentimes people ask today, okay, and you know, it's basically the same answer. When God calls him to account, what does Abel say? Well, where's your brother? Where's your brother Abel? And what does Cain say?
I don't know.
I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? And God's answer is basically what? Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You are responsible, you see. And so, you know, today, again, oftentimes people, am I my brother's keeper? I don't, you know, what's happened to them? It's not my problem. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Jeff? Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And then what happens then as a result of Abel dying? Cain is cast out. And Seth is then born to do what?
Replace Abel.
Not just replace him, but to do what, Jeff? To carry the lineage. Exactly, you see. And so that and one of the things that you read about as you're going through the scriptures here, one of the things that becomes very apparent is the importance and the significance of lineage to the Israelite people, and that carries we do these daily Bible reading programs, and you get to the book of Numbers, and what happens to most of us? You know, we start going, so-and-so begat, so-and-so, you know, and it's just name after name after name. And you go, why? What's the point of all of this? Well, you know, the significance of lineage is in a lot of ways lost on us. I mean, for us, it's you know, yeah, you know, hey, you know, we're carrying on our family name and so on and so forth. But to them, it was so much more significant. You see? And we go all the way back to, the promise of the Messiah and so forth. And as you look at the promises being made throughout the Old Testament, and you see those, how important then does lineage play in the fulfillment of those promises? So, you know, you go and you look at the distribution of the land when they came into the promised land, and how was that all divided up? According to family line and heritage. So lineage was vitally important to the people of that time. You know, where they came from, who their ancestors were, and so forth. Even much more important than it is for us today. So Seth was born then, and the line then was carried through him. Okay? And if you go over to Matthew and you go over to Luke and you look at the beginning of those Gospels where it gives us the lineage, the descendancy of Jesus, you see, then again you begin to see the connection and you see the significance of carrying that lineage and making sure that everybody knows who begat who and so forth, you see. So where it would put us to sleep reading it, to them it was vital information, okay, to know where you came from. Okay, any other questions or anything about Cain and Abel, any of this part? Okay, sure, absolutely. Well, certainly, when you got one brother killing another, that's the first incident of sibling rivalry. It was a bad one, wasn't it? You see. Okay, what else? Okay, then we come to Noah. Okay, now you know, as we're going through here. Again, in the next section of in chapter 5, we see this descendancy recorded, don't we? Okay, so that's kind of keeping us in line in terms of, okay, how did everything come to the point where it is? By the time we get to Noah's day, okay, and the information that we have here is two things: we got a flood and we got a rainbow promise. Okay. Now, concerning the flood, here's what we want to remember about this. Why did God send this flood? What does the text tell us here about why God brought this flood upon mankind? Okay. Why did he regret it?
That's all man can think about.
Okay. Yeah, the thing that I try to key in on here with people, and I talk about this a lot with folks even today, because, you know, so often people, you know, we look at the way the world is today and we go, man, the world is a terrible place. Just look at all the bad things that are happening in the world and so forth. And one thing I point out to them is, you know, it's bad, but it's not anywhere near as bad as it was in Noah's day. Okay? What is the description that it gives there? God looked upon man's heart and saw what? Every inclination of man's heart was only evil all the time. That's bad. Okay? When you use words like every and all, okay, you know, every inclination of man's heart was only evil. There was no good in man's heart. See? And it was that way all the time. That's what God saw when he looked upon man's heart. Okay? But the text there says Noah was what kind of a man? A righteous man. Okay? And so God decided, because of the way that man had become, that he was going to cleanse the earth and start over again. So he saved Noah and who else?
His wife.
His three sons and their wives. All eight people. Okay? And then the animals into the ark, and they all, you know, they all go in there and they live happily ever after, right? Probably wouldn't if they were all stuck in that ark forever, okay? They go into the ark, God sends the rain, he washes and cleanses the earth, right? Okay, and after all of the events, and again, this is the filler stuff that goes in there, okay, on your skeleton. What we need to know is, how evil, how wicked was man? Every inclination of his heart was only evil all the time. What did God do about it? He sent a flood and cleansed the earth. After the flood, when the ark settled and rested on the dry ground, and and Noah and his family came out of the ark, and the animals came out of the ark, then what happened? Okay. Well, before he got drunk, what happened? God put a rainbow in the sky. Why did he put the rainbow there?
Promise he'd never destroy the earth with
yes.
Blood.
Somebody turn to the text and read what it says there about the rainbow. What does God say here? This is significant. God placed a rainbow in the sky and he said what? Okay, he said what? Right, whenever I see this rainbow in the sky, I will do what?
Remember my covenant.
I will remember my covenant. Now, why is that significant? First of all, did you realize that? Okay? How many of you ever seen a rainbow? Almost everybody in here has seen a rainbow. Do you realize that when you see that rainbow, what's God doing? He's remembering that promise that He made to Noah, that covenant. At that moment, when you see that rainbow, God's remembering this covenant, you see, that He made way back when to Noah. It's a reminder. See, most people just look at the rainbow, oh, cool, look at that scientific phenomenon. You know, the sun shining through, the particles in the air, you know, in the air and so on, and it creates this, you know, transfusion of light and so on and so forth, right? Oh, no, 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 no. That's not all that's happening. God is remembering His covenant at the same time that you're seeing. I don't know about you, but to me, that's kind of awesome. That's just kind of an awesome thought. To know that, you know, especially when I realize that and I know that's what's happening, you know, I kind of think of it now when I see that rainbow, I'm thinking, you know what, right now God and I are on the same wavelength. You see, we're both thinking about the same thing right now at this moment. And that's kind of cool to me, okay? That God would give something like that and it still lasts today. That is... We're just about out of time. That is one of the... I want to be careful how I say this because I don't want anybody to misunderstand. But it is one of the few events and signs and things like this of that nature from the Bible, see, that is still going on today that we can readily see, you know, in our lives. Does that make sense? You see? That it was something that God did way back then in Noah's day, and it's still an active thing that's happening, and we can see it. You know, a lot of the promises that we read about throughout the Scripture, they've already been fulfilled, and we can read that, yeah, they happened, they took place, and so forth. This is a promise that is still going on, that you and I can connect to with God. They still do that. Kelly, finish us up here. Really? That's all we got for today, folks. We're out of time. We will next week. We'll begin with the Tower of Babel, and there's some really interesting stuff concerning that there too. And then we'll talk about Abraham. All right. Thank you all.